Welcome to the Kevin and Fred Show. I am your host, Kevin Kaufman, and along with my business partner, Fred Weaver, we bring to you our podcast where we highlight some of the best and brightest in the real estate industry, along with a weekly segment called Industry Headlines. We are a proud member of the Industry Syndicate, family of real estate podcasts, and we are so glad that you are listening and tuning in today, and we hope you enjoy our show. All right, guys, we're back with the Kevin and Fred Show, and today I'm joined by Coach Bert. Coach, how you doing, my man?
Doing wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. I've been looking forward to this interview for a few weeks now. You and I met recently, coaching up quite a few of my friends, as well as I've been able to participate in some group stuff with you as well. And so this is really exciting for me. So, Coach, let's start here for the listeners. For those who maybe don't know you or haven't seen you speak yet, give us a little history. Like, who is Coach Bert? What do you do these days? And I'm gonna probably bounce around on your time frame because I want to get into a bit of your story, but I want to dig in on some other parts.
At pretty much 15 years old, I decided I wanted to be a coach. I was coaching junior pro basketball. At 18, I got my first elementary coaching job. At that point, I was turned on to Dr. Stephen Covey, who I deeply studied from 18 to 25. That's very important to the story because a lot of my depth, a lot of my understanding of the whole person, a lot of my understanding how to activate prey driving people really came from that season in my life when I was a deep disciple of Covey. And so I became a young basketball coach in Tennessee. I was the youngest head coach in the state of Tennessee at the second largest high school at 21 or 22 years old. Wow. So I was kind of leading at a very young age, but I was doing a lot of different things as a basketball coach because I was always fascinated, Kevin, by the psychology of inner engineering people. How do I take a person, go to their deepest core of their potential, activate some kind of drive in them so they could play at a high level? So I was always fascinated by the motivational side, the psychology of inner engineering, of building competitive intelligence in people. And so I was doing all these cool things with my players. Like, I was teaching them 7 habits of highly effective people, principles of good to great, 5 dysfunctions of teams. People thought I was brainwashing the kids. That's what they'd say. Like, man, I don't know what the dude's doing, but he's brainwashing them kids.
I love it.
But I was kicking everybody's butt and I was winning. And because I was winning, people just kept asking, like, what are you doing? And so that question, Kevin, prompted me to sit down and write my first of 17 books. And I wrote a book called Changing Lives Through Coaching. And that book, unbeknownst to me, would set out a course of me being asked to speak in corporate America. Like, I had no intention of doing that. I wanted to coach kids. I wanted to go to college, be a basketball. I want to be the next Gino Auriemma, right, at UConn. That was my dream. Because I was in Tennessee and we had Pat Summitt, and Pat Summitt was such an influence on women's basketball. And so when I wrote that book, somehow I got interested in speaking, and people would say to me, you know, will you come speak to my group? Will you come motivate? That's what they'd say a lot. We know you're a big motivator, you know, come motivate my people. It was real estate teams and mortgage companies. And I spoke one day at Dell Computers for an hour. And they paid me more in an hour than I made in a month. I was working 80 hours a week, every week, 8 hours a day on Sunday to build this championship program and coach these kids. And then I go over here to Dell, speak for an hour, and they paid me more in an hour than I made in a month. And I'm like, man, I need to see what's going on here. And I went home and I studied coaches that spoke. And it was Lou Holtz, which is so crazy because in a few weeks I'm speaking and it's me and Lou Holtz are the main speakers. Oh, and so I went home and I studied like coaches that speak, and it was Mike Krzyzewski at Duke. It was Lou Holtz. And then I looked down in the corners like, man, they're making $100,000 for an hour.
Yep.
I'm like, man, I need to be doing this. I need to do what they do. So I started writing books. I started speaking. And about 5 or 6 years later, at 31, I won a championship. My school would go on to win 7 championships, 7 of 9. And then I retired from athletic coaching. And now I coach business people. You know, I'm coaching some of the top EXP people in the world, as you know, coaching Jimmy Franklin, coaching Jay Kinder, Al Stasik. We just picked up Monica and Chris Dean in Texas. I'm working with a lot of people in EXP, but that's just through years and years and years of me coaching people.
Yeah, you know, I want to go backwards for a second. You mentioned that at a young age, you had a desire to coach You had a desire to coach people because you realized, whether consciously or not, there was something that you could spark on the inside of people to help them perform better on the outside. Was there a coach or coaches who you saw maybe demonstrating that made you go, hey, this is actually something I think I could do, or something that interests me?
When I was 18 years old, I live outside of Nashville, Tennessee, and we had this great Division III coach named Don Meyer. And Don Meyer was a coach that most people will never know. He coached at David Lipscomb University, and which was a Christian, small Christian university in Tennessee. But this dude was a machine. And he actually won more games than John Wooden. And he would have these big coaching clinics. He used to make $1 million a year in the summer off his summer camps, because kids from all over the country would come to go through Don Meyer's camp. And this dude taught the players. Every player had to have a notebook. Every player had to sit up in the front one third of their seat. Every player had to learn these habits of success. And so hundreds of coaches would go watch him practice. And man, when I saw that dude practice and the way his players responded, I said, man, that's what I want to do. I want to use sports to teach life. I want to use the vehicle of sports to teach kids how to be real, real successful. And so I kind of had my own little greatness factory, and that's what we called it. So it was really Don Meyer that inspired me to coach like that, right? And be interested in the other parts. So you take Covey, who was a whole person, body, mind, heart, spirit, deep methodology, whole person, habits of effectiveness. And then you take Meyer, prey drive, you know, success. And then you kind of combine those two. And then that's kind of me. I'm kind of like a dynamic Covey with a lot of Meyer, because I have that killer instinct of a coach, of a basketball coach.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. That sparked something for me when you said that. Becoming a coach, I think, is not something that's a decision a lot of 15-year-olds make, right? Early on, or even teenagers. So to hear that there was someone, I assume there's probably someone there early in your life that had a lot of inspiration to do with that. So let me ask you this. All right. So you go from coaching athletics, coaching people basically up to be their best. Talk to me about how that relates to what you're doing today. Now, I understand that, you know, you obviously work with some really amazing people. You're sharing the stage with some of the top names in the world, and rightfully so. Talk to me about what are some of the things that just relate, like from an athlete, whether it's a Division I athlete, a high school athlete, a junior high athlete, on up to someone who owns a business and is just trying to be better, trying to be the best that they can.
Yeah, it has a lot to do with human nature. And when you really study human nature, like, you know, the book I have coming out next year is called Flip the Switch: How to Activate the Drive to Achieve Some Freakish Level of Success. And it's about prey drive, P-R-E-Y-D-R-I-V-E. Prey drive is in an animal. A dog has a prey drive. It is a dog's ability to stalk, capture, and kill prey. That's why dogs are always pursuing something, right? Well, I believe humans have a prey drive, which is an instinctual ability to see something and pursue it. And that is universal. My 14-month-old son has a prey drive. When he wants something, he pursues it, right? Well, what happens in life is that we get what we want and we become complacent. We become satisfied. Satisfied needs never motivate, only unsatisfied needs. And what really translates from the athletic world to the business world is that everybody has this prey drive in them. In the sports world, I'm trying to activate this competitiveness in a person, right? Some of those young ladies would come to me and they walk in with their head down and shy and insecure. And then I would coach them for 4 years and I activate that prey drive in them, build the whole person. Man, they're like little stone cold killing machines, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of what I do with salespeople, is I awaken a drive inside of them to want to pursue more. You look at the people I'm coaching at eXp, for example, they're already ridiculously successful. They're already making a lot of passive income. So why did they hire me to be their coach? Jay Kinder walked right up to me after he saw me speak for 20 minutes. First time I'd ever met the dude. And he said, man, you reactivated my prey drive. Like you reactivated something inside of me to go get it, man. Because in our world, we live in America, greatest country in the world. What happens is, man, we go get it and then we get comfortable. Yeah. And when we get comfortable, we quit doing the things that helped us go get it. So a guy like me walks into your life, and sometimes it's just re-sparking, but I have a methodology. I have a formula in how to explain your services, a formula in how to go out and prospect and recruit, a formula in how to follow up, a formula in how to get referrals, a formula in how to become a person of interest. I'm like a little tool maker for salespeople, where I create formulas and I bring that structure to you. And then I activate that drive in you to want to go get more.
That's awesome. And you know, I can definitely see that in some of the talks I've seen you give, as well as some of my brief interactions with you as well. And then hearing from others that have interacted with you even more. What I want to ask now is, so you're talking to a lot of top people, like you mentioned, both in mortgage and in the real estate business. So I'm sure you start to see themes show up when someone comes to you and you know there's more in there that you can absolutely help them activate. What are some of the common themes that you're seeing show up? You got people that are being successful at a certain level, could be, you know, super high, could be here. Regardless, it's definitely not their optimal level of where they could go. Are there some themes that you see kind of pop up commonly amongst high producers that want to be even, you know, do even more?
Well, I think what I look at, and I really break down in this book, and it's going to come out in 2022. I'm still working through the developmental part of the book, is I really say there's five activators of prey drive in a human. And this is what I'm trying to figure out. Do I need to activate the drive of competition in you? Right. So here's what I would say to a top EXP person. Let's say it's a number one person in the world, because there's different ways to measure that. Some people have the most volume. Some people have the most residual. I may say it's all good, man. But I know a dude down here that's doing $1 billion. Right. Like, are you comparing yourself to the number one guy at your company or the number one person in the world? Like, I try to awaken some kind of competitive spirit in a person.
Okay.
Right. I'm speaking at an insurance conference once. They parade the number one guy around. He gets up, he gets a trophy, wins an award. And while during my presentation, I'm like, man, stand up. You're the number one guy here, right? And I said, yeah. I said, congratulations. You feel good about yourself? I said, yeah, I feel good, man. You're number one here at this company, right? And I said, man, you're comparing yourself versus the wrong people. You shouldn't be comparing yourself to your peers here. You should be comparing yourself to the number one person on the planet, right? I'm trying to awaken, because that dude could very easily say, I'm the number one in my company. Why produce more? Why work any harder? Why go get it? So competition is an activator of prey drive. Fear of losing something is an activator of prey drive. Respect, money, power, status, reputation, right? That will activate your prey drive. Environment will activate your prey drive. Being in an environment that produces, that has expectation. I was doing something with Kevin Elko, that's Saban's coach at Alabama. And he's about to go in and work with Billy Donovan with the Bulls this weekend. And I said, what's the formula? Number one thing they do is raise the standards. Saban has incredible standards. Okay. And he don't let you slide from those standards. Then they have accountability. Then they have a certain language they use. Then they focus on connection. Then they focus on right? Like there's a formula that he brings to these teams to help them be national championship teams or NBA championship teams, right? Well, one of it is standard. So environment matters. Can you imagine being on my team and being lazy? Can you imagine being around me in my environment and not prospecting every day? Can you imagine not following up like a machine?
Wouldn't
like
last.
We can do it better, but man, we do it because I expect it of people. Okay. So environment is an activator of prey drive. Then you get into exposure. I see something, we're building a cool greatness factory in downtown Nashville. It's about a $6 million project for me, and it's elegant and inspired office location with structures of exchange, intentional collaboration, auditorium, podcast studios. I mean, it's beautiful. It will be elegant, right? So in the interim, I paid $8,000-$9,000 a month to have office space on the 22nd floor of the Regions building overlooking Titan Stadium. Like I'm looking at Titan Stadium right now and the river of downtown Nashville. And one of my team members come to me and said, man, why don't you save the money? Why don't we just work from home? Why don't we do this? And I said, no, man, I believe in environment. I believe in exposure. There's no way you can sit here and look at Titan Stadium and not think bigger. There's no way. So I'm a big believer in, so I invest the money every month so my team can get in an environment where they can work and they're exposed to bigger think. And then ultimately embarrassment is an activator of prey drive. I'm embarrassed by my performance in relationship to my potential, right? And when you think about these things, all of these things as a coach can be utilized to activate the drive in a top performer. So sometimes a top performer is performing good and it's like, you are doing good, man. You're doing real good. But in comparison to what you're capable of, you're not even close to your potential, man.
How do you know which, how do you know which, what lever to pull? Like which of those drives to start with first?
I don't know which lever to pull. I'm going to use all of them.
Okay.
I'm going to use every one of them, man. Oh, okay. And it's interesting. Sometimes when you're just around a person that delivers content the way I do, it activates your drive. Sometimes just having a third party, a fresh perspective, a fresh set of eyes, a fresh, like I'm just breathing some new life into something, right? Like I think about what I'm doing with Jay and Al, you know, it's not anything new. I'm just alerting them to some other ways to duplicate their teams. It's not like they're going to say, man, this dude brought a whole new framework and it's crazy and it's from outer space and it's so different than anything we've ever heard. It's just, I'm alerted. A good coach alerts. Hey, we could do a better job of intentional duplication. We could do a better job of explaining our value. We could do a better job of follow-up. We get everybody on the same song sheet, and maybe this accelerates the path. I'm not bringing any groundbreaking things. It's just the way I package and deliver content that's unique to me based on my unique background and my unique mentors and my unique experiences. So, I spoke last week. It was me, Cardone, Tim Grover, and Brad Lee. That's a good lineup.
That's a decent lineup there.
Like we were all in Long Island, about 800 people, right? Some of them's going to like Cardone. Some of them's going to like Bradley. Some of them's going to like Grover. Some of them's going to like me. But what I hear people say to me is, man, the way you package content and the way you deliver it in a very succinct way to help us grow is what I need. Okay. Well, my gift is packaging. My gift is codifying. My gift is deconstructing concepts and then delivering those concepts in a way that gets people to move. That's my gift, okay? I can't cook, geographically illiterate, right? I was in South Dakota last week. I told people on Instagram I was in North Dakota. I don't even know. But here's my point. If you said to me, man, I wanna help my team perform at a higher level, can you bring a structure to them? I'm your guy. So that's my lane. That's what I do. I'm a coach.
I love that. You've mentioned a couple times, bounce to a different topic here. You mentioned something called the Greatness Factory. Tell me, you talked about some of the things that are in the Greatness Factory, but tell me, what is a Greatness Factory?
The Greatness Factory is a vision I had in 2017 of a unique and inspired and elegant office. Basically, it's a structure of exchange where people can go to work. Like I'm in a WeWork here, right? And people rent space and they work here and it's nice, but there's no coaching. There's no intentional collaboration. See, their idea of intentional collaboration, and no offense to them, is to have donuts and wine at the end of the day. Right. My idea of intentional collaboration is you and I get together and talk about how we're going to make $10 million together, like strategic partnership. So what I do, take a WeWork, add an auditorium, add podcast studios, add a gym, add a little restaurant for people to eat, add weekly and monthly content to participate in. Add coaching programs, add dinners, private dinners at the Greatness Factory, where you can raise capital. To me, the Greatness Factory is like a little city where the great people work and they come and they want exchange with each other. And exchange comes in money, ideas, energy, connections. And that's really something I've really mastered because I do events, boot camps, retreats. And then I have this community of people I coach, and I've really figured out over the last 10 years how to create real value for exchange there. And that's really what a Greatness Factory is it's a unique and inspired real estate location where you can work, grow, learn, connect.
You know, you really, when you describe it that way, what comes to mind for me is, I'm going to forget the name of the agency, but there's a sports representative agency that basically it's an academy, right? Where it's all that, but like for basketball or for athletics, for the people that are represented by the agents within that organization. And that's really like, I really connected to that. I think that's a great idea. So now, and if I'm not mistaken, this isn't just something for you in Nashville, right? I've seen you at least on Instagram and a few places social kind of looking for other places to do this in. Is this like a concept you want to take like worldwide? What's your bigger plan with this?
Yeah, we're in talks with people in Dubai to have one in Dubai, London, Miami, Tampa, Houston, Scottsdale, Phoenix, Gilbert. Like I'm interested in licensing the concept and partnering with people in those cities. Let's say we have one in Scottsdale or Phoenix or Gilbert, right? It's I bring the concept and the secret sauce. We partner with people in that market. We can show them how these greatness factors can produce up to $1 million+ a year. That's just in the rents and the people that work there. That's not even counting auditorium use. It's not counting how much money can be made when you get there and do deals together. And so basically we're working on licensing plays where, you know, if I say, man, if you said, I want to have a greatness factory in Phoenix or wherever, then I say, man, this is exactly how it works. This is how you can make money. This is how we make money. Right. And this is the secret sauce we're bringing to the equation. So it's, you know, I studied WeWork. I've studied all the models where they have shared office space. And what I've done is I've basically taken that concept to a much higher level, to where there's real value for you to have an office here. Now, what happens? Let's say I'm in this office here. This is my personal office here at the WeWork. It's all dressed up nice. And I got a big screen television I'm looking at. Here's the deal. If I could come to work here and put together partnership deals with the person that's over there and get coached, and my whole team can get coached, it makes the value of the office space much more valuable to me. So I could charge more rent for this office space because the value of being here is much greater, right? And that's called structures of exchange. I exchange ideas and energy with people. And so I'm looking for places all over the country to have these.
That's fantastic. I think that fits a need that's out there. To your point, there's a lot of shared office space, and very much the culture seems to be like the happy hour thing that you mentioned. So I think this, you know, just fills a gap for those of us who want to be around bigger thinkers, people that can push us, people that can help lead us, people that we can help lead, et cetera. So I love where you're going with this. You said earlier 17 books already. Did I hear that number right?
The new book, Flip the Switch, is scheduled to be out in 2022. That's my 17th book. You know, and just thinking about writing all those books, some were small, some were big. Some I had publishing deals on. I think I'm just now really, really learning that game and how to use a book. A book is an asset. Book forces you to have a message. Message gets you in front of people. And you don't need more money, you need more people. The people have the money. So the book forces you to come up with a concept and codify that concept and deconstruct that concept. And what people are paying for is a unique methodology that you have that solves a problem for them, right? You're in a real estate game. A lot of agents do not have a selling system. They do not have a good 7-touch follow-up. They do not have a good plan to extract referrals after a person buys a house with them. They don't have a strategy to become known, become a person of interest. I write books that solve problems for people. They're how-to books, how to become a person of interest, how to work a selling system, how to follow up 7 to 15 touches, right? That's the kind of coaching I give, is like how to coaching. Like, this is how you do it, man. This is how you expand. And I make it very chronological, very systematic for people. So they go, boom, I can go do this.
That's awesome. I love that. I heard you mention a story one time, and I don't remember what video it was that I watched, but you shared about conversation you had with Grant Cardone, and like you referenced like getting on stage at say like the first 10X conference is one accomplishment, but you know, to do it now, that it's a different ballgame, right? Because his audience has grown so much, and that who he allows to get on stage, he's a lot more careful with. And yet, you know, you had a story about how you made it, you effectively said, hey man, I'm gonna make this happen. Would you share that with us?
You know, I first met Cardone in 2012. I had a radio show in Nashville on the Fox News Network called Change Your Life Radio. And so I had a show every week, and I interviewed successful people. And I had everybody on that show. I mean, everybody. And I was walking through a Chicago airport, saw the 10X book. I didn't know who Cardone was. at that time. I said, looks like a great concept. I identify with the concept. Dude looks like a good looking dude. Why don't I have him on the show? And I reached out to his people, had him on the show. When I was finished, he said, man, I do interviews all the time. You're more prepared than anybody that's ever interviewed me. And you and I should be doing things together. This was back really before he was really known and famous. And so we become friends. I began becoming on the Cardone Zone. He had a radio show at the time called Cardone Zone that he would ask me to be on. And then he said, come to Riviera Maya, Mexico and speak at this 10X event, original 10X, like 75 people. And fast forward, I don't know, X number of years, 4, 5, 6 years. I'm in his office in Miami and he's got 10X2 coming up. I paid to go to 10X1 in Miami. Then he's got 10X2 coming up in Las Vegas. And I'm sitting across from him and I just, man, it's a moment that I said, I'm going for it. I said, man, do you think I'm good enough to speak at 10X? He said, yeah, I absolutely do. And I said, well, why haven't you asked me to speak at 10X? And he's like, you know, I spent $4 million and I'm having all these people and your following's not big enough. And I said, I understand. Right? Like when people give you objection, I've listened to him. I agree with him. I understand. Tell you what I'd like to do. We're friends. You just told me you spent $4.7 million to buy the space. Here's what I'd like to do. I want to help you. I'm here to help you. I'm going to purchase $100,000 of tickets. Okay. I'm going to write you a check for $100,000. I'm going to buy 50 VIP tickets. Would that help you? He said, yeah, that would help. I said, okay, good. I'm going to bring 50 of my best clients with me, but I'm only going to do it. I'm only going to bring these people with me if I'm speaking. They're only going to come if I'm speaking on stage, man, because these are my monster producers. This is my tribe of people. And I said, you think that would ensure that I could speak? And he's like, yeah, I think we can do that, right? And so I buy these tickets at $2,000 a piece. I turn around and package them up into a package. We call that bundling, stacking. Yeah. And I sold those tickets for $5,000, right? So I bought them for $200,000, sold 50 in 3 to 6 months. So we made $250,000. So I've already made $150,000 positive. And then I speak at 10X in front of 10,000 people. And that was kind of my coming out. Like, this little dude is good. Like he can do, we don't know who he is, but we like him. And we probably did, you know, I think probably that day between, you know, $250,000 of sales that day. Ultimately, over the next 2 or 3 years, we did over $1 million of business from me speaking at 10X.
That's not a bad
idea. So I'll always have a deep affinity with Cardone. I'll always have a deep respect for him because he gave me an opportunity and he didn't have to do that. That changed my career. So for the rest of my life, you know, it's like Elko, thank you, I owe you. Right. Thank you. I'll help you. So the other day he called me to raise some money for a charity thing. And he said, I need some money for charity. I'm trying to raise X number of dollars to do X. And I said, man, count me in. Tell me where to wire money. You know, because that's how because he helped me, man. And you know, I wish we were doing more things together. I don't have as big of an audience as he would like right now. And I'm trying to build that audience. But I think there was a respect for both of us there.
Well, I think the key word there is yet. Like, you don't, maybe you don't have it yet. Because what I heard, what I love about that story, Coach, is it's twofold. Number one, you weren't like a brand new speaker that day. Like, it wasn't like you were not someone unrefined and unpolished. You'd been working on your craft for quite some time at that point. Right. Yeah. You know, you're good. Maybe not enough people know that you're good, but you knew you were good. You knew it and you believed it so much that you were willing to bet on yourself and write that check, which I guarantee was probably not so easy to write at the time. However, you saw it as like, no, I'm all in on me because I know that I know what I bring and I'm what I can deliver.
I knew if you gave me 10,000 people, there's no way we couldn't do something. And I went up there not to sell people. My strategy is just to be so good when I'm speaking and so impactful that people want to do business with me. They want to say, man, I need this guy in my life in some way. Like, I don't know exactly what it is, whether it's going to his boot camps, whether it's reading his books, whether it's watching him on YouTube, whether it's being his coaching program. I just want to be impactful. And there's a percentage of those people that are going to align with that message.
Yeah. The other thing I've taken from you is you're really clear. It's not for everyone. Like, there's going to be people that identify with you and want to, for lack of a better word, buy what you're selling because they identify with your beliefs. You know, something I've worked on since starting to study some of your material and listening on some of your calls is working on that EOS format and understanding beliefs and story of origin
And, you know, really going from there, what I love about your message is you're really clear. It's not for everyone, but it's the right for, you're the right person for a lot of people. And I think that's something that a lot of business people struggle with in sales, is that we want to be able to sell to everyone. And the reality is if you're for everyone, you're probably for no one.
The person of interest is not begging or manipulating or trying to hard sell people. I have a set of beliefs. I have a set of experiences. They can solve problems for people who share the same beliefs, who want to get better, who believe in coaching. You know, I was thinking about a guy the other day that I've been courting for a year, year and a half. He's got a $100 million company. And I've been trying to convince him, man, I can help you. Like, I can help you. Like, I may not be able to help you if you're worth $50 million. You may not think I can coach you, but I know I'm qualified to coach your people. But then I caught myself and I said, man, why am I trying to convince this dude? If you don't see it, you don't see it. Who cares? 7 billion people on the planet. Like I'm only looking for people that are looking for me, man. And there's enough of those people out there to make millions of dollars. So when you catch yourself trying to hard sell a person, you need a coach. I can help you. You need to do this. Listen, it ain't for everybody. I'm only looking for a certain cut of person. That's why I say I'm looking for Navy SEALs, not baby SEALs. Right? Like, I'm looking for serious people who are looking for an advantage and believe a coach can give them that advantage. Why does Saban go to Elko? Why is Billy Donovan bringing Elko in this week at the Bulls? Billy Donovan, like, he worked under Patino, like because they think that dude can give them an advantage. Why did Jordan go to Grover? Why did, like when you think about this, man, why do the best people in the world have somebody coaching them? Because they believe the coach can give them an advantage. Now, if you don't share that belief, you know, I was speaking last week at a chiropractic thing and we offered a couples retreat. One of my most popular products that I'm doing now is me and my wife do a couples retreat because my wife wrote a book called Living with a Monster. And it's about how you live with an obsessed dude like me. And so, man, we're selling these couples retreats out like 20 couples at a time. It's crazy. And one dude at the chiropractic conference come up and said, look, he's a little too much for me. But my wife said, we're in, so we're going. but that didn't bother me when he said, man, the dude's a little too much for me. I'm like, all right, man, I ain't for everybody. I don't want to be for everybody. I want to be for people who freaking want an advantage. And they see me as a helping them have that advantage. And if you don't see it, it's okay. It's not rejection.
It's not rejection. I love that because it actually shows, to me, that would be a demonstration of I'm being clear about who I am and what I'm about, what I believe. And that person is too, or at least, you know, on some level they are too, that, and it's okay that we're not for each other. That is actually totally okay. At least we're for something and we're aware of what, because, you know, one of my beliefs is that a lot of us aren't aware of what's going on around us and what we actually really believe. We think we believe things that we don't. We're thinking them because we've been thinking them our whole lives.
That's right. That's why the explanation of value is so critical, because it forces you to get clear on what you believe. Every decision I make is based on a clear belief. I am very clear in what I believe, what I don't believe. And because of those beliefs, I can take action faster. Like, if you brought me an opportunity today and said, man, I could put 500 people in a room for you, but I can't pay you. Well, I believe you don't need more money. You need more people. I believe if you gave me 500 people, I could generate $100,000 from 500 people. So I'm not worried about what you can pay me on the front end, because I know if you just give me 500 people, we can deliver something. So why look at how fast I can make that decision. It's based on a belief. The belief is you don't need more money, you need more people. The people have the money. So anything you can do to get in front of people is a good thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Man, that is such a great and clear belief and mindset and way to approach things. Just realizing what you said in the moment, when you're really clear on what you believe, it does, you can make those decisions so much quicker. There's no, you don't have to have all the energy and the thought around it. It's just, hey, this lines up. This actually lines up with one of my beliefs. Boom, let's do it. Or, you know what? This complete opposite from my belief. I can't do that.
Yeah. And like I said, there's no such thing as rejection. I want to go where I feel celebrated, not where I feel tolerated. Mm-hmm. I work with some companies, man, they're 100% in. They want to be involved with me on a weekly basis. Those are the ones we move the needles. I work with some companies that don't really believe in coaching. They bring me in. They say, we'll call you when we need you. That's not what I believe. I believe coaching is something like military. You train. The military trains every day. They don't hand a dude a machine gun in the military and say, watch a video. Good luck. Like, they train the dude, right? Yeah. And that's kind of what I believe is training is something you do. This morning I was role playing with my team. We could do more of that. We should be doing more of that. We should be testing them. We should be listening to every call they make. We should be coaching and giving feedback. We should be monitoring everything they do, which we do now, but we could always do it better. So, you know, I know when I speak that I could get better at embedding. I could get better at pitching my services. I could get better at telling stories. So, man, there's people out there that coach me on those things.
I love that. You're getting coached. So yep. That, yeah, because that sticks out to me because I know a lot of people in your space that are the coach and they are the speaker, they are the headliner, and they're not getting coached. And that all to me, that always just, it doesn't seem, it doesn't line up. You know what I mean? You like, if you either believe in coaching or you do not believe in coaching. And so I'm to me that speaks volumes and I appreciate that about you.
Yeah. I can learn anything from anybody at any time. See, I don't have a belief that if I make more money than a person, I can't learn anything from them. Right. Like my 14-month-old son has a great spirit about him. He's smiling. He's happy. He's like, I can learn something from him. My 9-year-old daughter, I can learn something from. Like, some people come into this mindset as I make more money than you do there. Like the dude I was telling you, he's like, what are you going to teach me? I make more money than you. Well, there's a lot more to this game than money. Okay. They're right. I've coached people that make worth $100 million that can't have a decent relationship with another person. Okay. So it ain't all about the money. I don't look at it like that. Like, I'm not going to take any advice from them because they haven't, you know, they're not making as much money. I look at it as, man, I could learn anything from anybody. The other day I was in the gym at 5 a.m. And I had a bad attitude. Attitude's a posture of the body represented by physical state. If you have a bad attitude, your posture of your body shows. Well, I had a bad attitude, man. It's 5:00 a.m. I don't want to be in the gym. It's Monday morning. I'm pushing. I go to a gym where you box for 30 minutes and then you do functional fitness. It's called Rock Box. It's a new thing. It's like nightclub meets fight club. And so I got a bad attitude, man. And then I look over to my left and there's a dude there who's high-fiving people, going as hard as he can, smiling, and he's got a prosthetic leg. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, this is ridiculous. He's got the best attitude in the whole place. Right. And he, if anybody has the right to not have a bad attitude, be him, man. And I'm sitting there going, man, that dude inspires me. I'm learning something from him. And so then I did a whole video that morning on how to reverse a negative attitude. And people was like, man, I needed to hear that, man. I had such a bad attitude. We have such bad attitudes about small things that, you know, we major in the minors. We get offended so easily. We get caught up in things that don't matter. My publisher just sent me a message saying, man, we're going to push your book back from February to June because it's not as strong as I want it to be. My first tendency was like, what? Like, man, I've been promoting this book. We're bringing it out in February. I've been pre-selling copies to it. Now you're telling me it's coming out in June. And then I just took a deep breath and I asked myself a question. Could it be better? I don't want it to be a bestseller. And then people say the book could have been better. Like, she's right. That's why she's there. That's why she's the editor. She's like, you can go deeper. It needs to be more methodical. We need to go deeper into your brain on Prey Drive. Right. And so at first I got upset. I'm like, it's ridiculous. Then I'm like, you know what? So I sent an email back and I said, hey, anything I can do to make the book better, I'm coachable. Assign me a better editor. Go deeper with me. Get me on a plane somewhere where I, you know, like, help me make the book as good as it can be. Cause that's ultimately what I want. I didn't like the news she gave to me, but at the end of the day, I'm okay with it because if it's going to make it better, I'm okay with it. It wouldn't deliver the time I wanted, but hey, it is what it is, man.
Love that, man. A lot of great lessons in there. So you mentioned, you're obviously doing a lot of in-person speaking things. So for those folks that maybe want to go catch you, whether in person or online, what's the best place for people to kind of catch up with you at?
I would go to follow me on Instagram, number one, because you can follow my stories and where I'm at. I do a lot of coaching on there. YouTube is a great place. I put out a video every day, a ton of content. If you want to get to know me better, coachburt.com. I'm an in-person guy. Okay. I've got online programs, but I don't know what to tell you, man. I'm a coach. I like people. I like interacting. I like energy. I like exchange. So I do a lot of still coaching live. I'll be in Dallas this week. Then I'm going to Denver. Then I'm going to Washington, D.C. Then I'm coming out to Phoenix in November. Then I'm going to Houston. I mean, just wherever, right? Because I do believe in getting in a room and coaching people. And so I'd love for you to come to one of my boot camps or see me somewhere, watch, you know, anything, anywhere you can engage with me at a deep level.
That's awesome. All right. Before we start to wrap up, I've got one more question for you. Before I do that, is there anything else that we should have covered or we could cover and we'd be remiss to not before we sign off for today?
No, I appreciate the opportunity to be with you. I know that, and I want everybody to learn a lesson here. Cardone said this to me one day. He said, man, you're one of the greatest coaches in the world, but you don't know how to market and promote. And he said, this ain't business, this is show business. And until you learn how to market and promote, I've had to become a better marketer and a better promoter. And part of that is being on podcasts. Part of that is being out in front of people. Part of that is learning the game of promotion. And every time you and I do this, this allows me to have more collateral. This allows us to push it out on YouTube. This allows people to see me in a different, to go deeper with me and hear my philosophy or why I'm qualified. So I would encourage everybody out there. Most people don't have a talent problem. They got a marketing problem. Okay. And when somebody says they want you to be on a podcast, my natural tendency is, man, I got a lot going on. I got to slow down and do a podcast. But it is necessary to do these things to share your set of skills with people. So I appreciate when people reach out to me and say, man, I want you to be on my podcast. I want you to be part of something. I'm open to it. And I encourage your listeners and viewers, be open to possibility, man. You never know who's going to watch this. And I'll tell you this, my book, Everybody Needs a Coach in Life. I wrote that book. It was published through a division of Simon & Schuster. It was in a bookstore in Houston, Texas. You don't even know which bookstores your book's going to be in, by the way, when you sign a publishing deal. And I go to my home city, Nashville. It wouldn't be in Nashville, but it'd be in Houston. I'm like, I don't understand. But a woman walks into that bookstore, picks up my book, takes it back to her office. Okay. Number one, one of the number one energy doctors in the world says, we got to hire this guy to be our coach. I go to Houston. I sign a $250,000 contract to be their coach. He becomes my personal doctor. He tells me, if you want to have another kid, you need to get your wife to my wellness center. Let's get all of her hormones right. 7 years we went without another kid. My wife goes to his wellness center. We have our son, Eli. Right? It all happened because that woman walked into a bookstore, got my book, and it started that sequence of events that ultimately I'll never forget, man, which is why you have to put yourself out there and do things because you never know what's on the other side of that opportunity. That's what I'm trying to say to you. Take the meeting, talk to the person, follow up with the connection. Somebody connected me to you and said, man, you need to know Kevin, these guys out there, because they're good dudes and they're an EXP and you're helping a lot of EXP people. And I'm like, man, any way I can help you, just tell me what you want me to do. I can help you. Okay. So that's what I encourage your listeners to do today.
And that's all. You actually answered the question I was going to have there at the end. And God, that was beautiful. Let's end on that. Coach Burt, I just want to take a moment to say thank you. I appreciate you taking the time to do this and appreciate what you're doing. Guys, absolutely. We're going to link in the show notes to all of the places you can catch up with Coach Burt and follow him at, for sure. Go see him live. I know I'm excited to see you here in Phoenix coming up in early November. And that's it. We'll talk again very soon, I'm sure.
All right, brother. You're a good dude. Thank you very much. Have a great day, okay?
You too, my man. Take it easy. We'll talk soon. All right, guys. We'll see you next week.
Today's episode is brought to you by Kevin and Fred's community at eXp Realty. Learn why over 1,000 real estate agents joined eXp Realty last week. Join us for an informational webinar this Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific time. Register at intro to exprealty.com.